Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome, and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 61 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So announcements this week, it was surprisingly light. There was actually just a couple things. The first thing, we received a new picture from the Outlander Stars Instagram account showing our friend Agav and Sam and Ron Moore looking over what appears to be some sort of a script. Sam is, of course, in his full costume, looking dashing as ever.
That script has been in someone's pocket. That's
right?
All I'm going to say.
It's all, like, folded up and... I bet it's like cheat sheet. It's like Gaelic cheat sheet. It could be anything. Could be dirty pictures. Who knows? Fully anything. But Sam looks like he's very concentrated on whatever they're looking at. Actually, they all are. Very contemplative. Mm-hmm. It's a nice picture. I enjoyed this one. And we also, Stars released a video this week that we had, that the Stars Outlander account on Facebook now has 500,000 followers. Which is awesome, and in honor of that, they released a short video with several of the stars commenting on that, which I thought was just lovely. So it was a nice little treat. A nice little treat for the Outlander fans to get to see something new in our hiatus time. So hoping that will help us.
I didn't hear the end of that word. I thought I was going to hear something new in our hay.
Nope.
And then you finished it, so.
Yep. Okay.
Glad you finished it.
So, and like I said, it's been light, y'all. It's a light week, and that's totally okay. But it's good because it left us more time to work on some other things, getting stuff in place.
And this week,
we do have a special guest joining us. Many of you know her. We always retweet her because we love her. But she is amazing. She makes beautiful, beautiful, beautiful fine jewelry,
which we would still be a fan of even if she didn't agree to come on the show.
Right. But we would all like all of you to get to know Janet Katsuan a little better. So without any further ado, here's our interview with Miss Janet Katsuan.
It is our distinct pleasure to welcome Janet Katsuan to our show. Janet, are you there?
I'm here.
Yay!
Hello.
Yay! There was a little pause and I thought, oh no.
No, we lost her.
So how are you?
I'm doing well. It's 9 o'clock here in New York City, and it's cold. I guess fall's here. I don't like it.
Aww, lucky ducks. Here it's still
90-some degrees.
Here it's still 90s, and I'm not happy with that. Okay, so for those who may have never heard of you, your name or what you do or anything associated with you. I first heard about you through Summer. Actually, I'll let Summer tell that. Summer, how did you first find out about Janet?
Well, I think that I was reading Deborah Harkness's All Souls trilogy. The first one had just come out.
Such a wonderful trilogy.
Oh my gosh, so good. And I don't even know. I think maybe Deborah had it linked on one of her pages, but she was showing her themed jewelry that she was creating for the series. And I was like, oh, that's such a neat idea. And then I pulled the site up, and I saw that she'd done it for, like, 5 other series that I liked. And I was like, what is this lady up to? I need to know this person, and I need to find out more. But and then, so I already liked you when I didn't even know you'd read Outlander. And then when Outlander popped up, and I saw that you went to the Comic-Con.
Well, this is funny, is that, yeah, so about a year ago, because it was New York Comic-Con, and it's exactly this week, Diana Gabaldon and Ron Moore and the entire Stars crew had this fantastic lunch here in New York City. And that's officially when they kicked off their publicity campaign. And I thought, you know, I've been a fan for years. I'm actually going to print out one of the pearl necklace that I had designed, God, years ago. Maybe like, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago. And so I thought I'd give it to Diana because, you know, I mean, I've just had it sitting in my, you know, in my studio. And so I finally got to meet her and I handed it over to her. She was really excited to see it. And we took a picture and it was really a wonderful time. So it's been exactly a year since I I pulled it out of my drawer and was able to share it with Diana. So that was a pretty good moment.
And that's when I realized, because I saw that picture when you posted it, and you said, you know, you'd been talking to her.
Right.
And that's when I realized, she's into Outlander.
Got it. Okay, then that was it. So when Summer realized that, and somehow, whether you shared it on my timeline or just...
I did. I didn't want to share it until I showed Diana, so I thought, okay, at least I showed it to her and I can share it with everyone else now. But yeah, so I put it on there and said that I gave it to her. So that's when it started. That's when all the Outlander people were like, hey, you're on my radar. So that was interesting.
Yeah. Exactly. So whenever you had done that, and then Summer saw that, so Summer already liked your stuff.
Yeah, of course.
But when she saw that, she brought you to my attention, and I had a little mini freak out going, who is this person? Who is this woman? Where has she been? And why did you just tell me about this? And it's funny, maybe we'll get to it if we have time, but it's funny how you're kind of publicly expressing yourself through Outlander is by releasing that photo at the New York Comic Con last year, and then we got a chance to meet at the San Diego Comic Con.
Oh my God.
This year,
that was
an amazing, my first Comic Con ever. So it was just an amazing few days. So, okay. So then that's how we first heard about you collectively. And then, you know, we kind of asked a little here, asked a little there, and you were so kind to say yes to coming on our show so we could interview you. So it's just been so exciting, and we have tons to talk about, you know, oh my gosh, your designs are wow. So let's start kind of at the beginning-ish.
Okay,
beginning-ish, exactly. How did you, as in not when you were born, but how did you get started designing jewelry?
Well, it was accidental. I went to school at New York University's Interactive Telecommunications Program, which is kind of like the artist's MIT, except at NYU. And I was in technology, and it was right around the internet bust. And I was working on some software that got funded but then got pulled. And so, like many internet people, I was out of a job. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to write my book. And so I started writing a book where the protagonist was a jewelry designer. And frankly, I knew nothing about jewelry, except my mother's a really great collector of jewelry. So I knew what good jewelry looked like, but I had no idea about the names or anything. So I decided that I'm going to work at a jewelry store and learn everything. And so I worked for this jewelry store in my town, and I just found out that it was easier to design jewelry than it was to research about my protagonist and write a book. So I thought, well, maybe I should try it. I mean, why not? So I trained with a master jeweler. He was Dutch, and he taught me the basics, and then, you know, for a few years, and then I started making very fine jewelry and platinum and gold and very, very high-end things in the very beginning. So that's how I fell into it, through books. It's funny that I came to it through books, and then now I'm back to books again.
Only as it should be, right? As it should be.
That's what I mean. I'm a big reader. So I'm a very huge reader. So, I mean, it had to come back to books eventually.
Yeah, because you live with them and you breathe them, so you ultimately would not have been able to get away from them anyway. So they would have had to have found their way into your design somehow, and they did.
Somehow. Absolutely, absolutely. So that's how I started. I mean, it was very accidental. I mean, I have no idea how. I mean, I didn't plan it at all. I mean, I thought I was just going to go back into software design or something artistic and I don't know. So this is where I am. I'm kind of jewelry and books.
So you mentioned how you got started and some of your background. One of the surprising things that still kind of rocks my world in a very scary, freaky, but amazing way is, and I don't even know how it happened, but how did we find out that the others spoke German when we were in San Diego? How did that happen?
I don't know how that happened. That was very funny. I think we drove everyone crazy because we just started speaking German. It was really funny. It was hysterical.
It was very funny. And it was, I think it was something along the lines of, I didn't just start speaking German. I said something, either you mentioned that you spoke it or that you had worked there, or I mentioned that I spoke it. It was one of the two of us said it. And then I remember you saying, das gibt's ja nicht. And then I fell onto the floor. No, I really didn't. But, and then I was, this is ridiculous. So how did you come to learn to speak German?
Well, I lived in Germany for 5 years, and I was also, it comes back to books again. I was working, representing American publishers in the German language territories. I was in what publishers called subsidiary rights, and I was, I was working in Germany and in publishing. So, and that's a place to be, really. It was fantastic. I was in Frankfurt. I've been to like 10 Frankfurt book fairs, and I know a lot of German publishers. It was a lot of fun, actually. Yeah, so I learned German, and I spoke German, and I love it. I mean, I love speaking German, although it's very hard to find people who speak German well. And so that's what was so funny, because we were like, your German is really good. I mean, both ways. Your German, your accent is impeccable. It's amazing, really. But does Summer speak German as well?
I do speak a little German, but not to the degree that Ginger does.
Okay.
And my vocabulary is very small.
Okay.
But she, her accent.
I understand it very
well. She understands it very well.
Oh.
And she, her accent is very good. And she definitely does not give herself enough credit as far as what she's able to produce. I understand she did not study it as long as I did. However, her German is pretty darn good.
I lived in Germany for like 6 months when I was an exchange student. And my one claim to fame was that they could not place me by my accent.
Oh, really? Oh.
They definitely didn't think I was American, but they thought I was from someplace in the European continent area. They thought I was from somewhere over there, and I just never corrected them.
Yeah, I usually get Sweden or something. And to me, that's like, oh, that's amazing. I'm happy if they think I'm Sweden.
They think I'm alien because they know that I'm not American, right? And then they're like, how come you speak German so well? I'm like, I don't know. I learned very intensively. That was always funny.
Well, and you had the, I'm not the only person who could say this, and I'm sure you would agree that the best way to learn, not that we all can always do this, of course, but the best way to learn is
immersion.
Is through immersion in the actual target culture.
I agree.
And that's what
you did. I agree. And I recommend it for everyone
if they
have a chance to live abroad, to do it, especially for Americans, because much as I love America, it's just, you have a different perspective after leaving the country and coming back. It's a wonderful experience. So
absolutely.
I always, as do we.
And I think one of the best, and I know this is not always possible, especially if the parents are, you know, don't speak a second language.
Right.
One of the best you can ever give a child is a second language. And so I'm very passionate about that. So that's why
my parents gave me Pig Latin, and it hasn't helped me at all.
Our parents gave us Pig Latin. And yeah, that doesn't really get as much. So you mentioned, of course, how your jewelry design kind of began with books and then came back to books. It includes that quite intensely for many of your designs. What would you say, or how would you say, have your interest in books, the different types of genre that you like, how have your book tastes, your book interests developed over the years?
Well, I have basically two piles. I have literary. I hardly read nonfiction, by the way. I do read nonfiction, but usually it's from authors that have written fiction, and I try to read everything an author has written. So I do have two piles. First pile is literary. The second pile is what I consider genre. And it just happens that most of the male writers that I read are literary, and most of the genre writers I read are female. And that's, I don't know how that happened, but that's how it split up. And so it's really interesting. I probably read one literary novel to about four or five genre novels. And that's, nothing has changed. I think for the last 20 years, it's been pretty consistent. I read about 200, anywhere between 150 to 200 books a year. And that's been my whole adult life. So I read a lot of books.
Yeah, I would say that's like a book every 2 to 3 days.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's not so crazy that my jewelry is about books since I'm reading all the time. So, but I found it easier because I love fantasy and I love world building. So it was easier for the jewelry to come out of the genre area. So, although I love magical realism, which I consider literary. So, but I have fun not just with the universe, but with the fans and also, you know, with trying to make something real for somebody that is so unreal and fictitious, right? I mean, nothing's real, more real than wearing something on your finger and looking at it and remembering something in the book. I think it's fantastic.
So what was the first book that inspired you to start making a jewelry line?
I would have to say it was Charlene Harris and her Sookie Stackhouse books. It wasn't my first project I worked on. The first project I worked on was Rachel Kane's Morganville, and that's really evolved interestingly. But Charlene is the one that Charlene Harris really captured me because I'm a big Buffy the Vampire person. I've read almost every vampire or anything that has been written. So I started up with Charlene, and the fans were just like, can you make something? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I've never tried it before. So I tried it out, and it just worked. It was kind of like the planets aligning. There was a demand for it. There was a great universe to design for. And True Blood just started. And I literally just wrote an email to Audrey Fisher, who is the costume designer, and said, hey, I'm doing this for the fans. And, you know, Charlene Harris said I could do it. Do you want anything for your show? And she said, yes, I do. And so that was luck. I was in the right place at the right time. So
that's pretty, it was meant to be, obviously. But
it was meant to be. It was meant to be.
Because, you know, you can have what you think or what to you are brilliant ideas or great ideas or very exciting things. And the timing can seem, you know, oh, it's coming on now, or I see this and it will be great. You know, so many things can look like they're interesting timing wise, but there's still that component. So that there's the muse that gives you your ideas. There's the timing and the universe that come together that make this opportunity seem like it might be something to do. But then you also have to, I'm trying to put it a little bit delicately, you have to have the balls to do it.
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, you have to design, you have to know how to design. But the other thing is since I read so much, I know, well, I'm confident about the books that I think will do well. And it's also just being in the publishing industry, is that I just knew which books would do really well. And so all the books that I've chosen them. No author has come to me and said, make jewelry for me. I said, I need to make jewelry for your books. And then they became famous, and then they turned into a TV. Except for Charlene's. It was, hers kind of came up all at the same time. It was, I think she was on her fifth book in the series, so there was enough fans, and then True Blood came out, and then everyone fell in love with Alexander Skarsgård, and then all of a sudden, there was just a whole, everything exploded at one time, and I just happened to be in the middle of it. So I feel like I was really lucky. So, yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting. When people say that it just happened, I totally believe them. You're just in the right place at the right time. Actually, that's my case for my entire life, but for this, it's just, it was extraordinary this time.
Well, we're very happy that you had that, because then, you know, we eventually heard of you. So with or without Allender, we're just glad that you've had your journey that you've had so that we could find out about you.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. I love Outlander fans. I think they're so respectful. I mean, and so I feel like I have to read the novels like for the fifth time. Well, actually for the fourth time, because I feel like I've read them. How come you guys are, I mean, I'm so scared to say something absolutely wrong. But when I do, everyone's so nice about it. I mean, you know, I've been in universes where if you say something wrong, everyone jumps on you. Like, how could you not know that? But Outlander fans are so, I have to say, they are the nicest fans I've ever met for a universe, ever.
What I've noticed with Outlander fans is that we're just so excited to find somebody else who loves these books that we'll forgive almost anything as long as you love it. We'll gently correct you, but we just wanted people around that love it as
well.
We're just
thrilled to speak with others who love them as well.
This is totally off topic, but I'm looking at the list of books that you've done books for. And there's, for me, I would call it a book series that's definitely not there that should be. Have you read The Fever series by Karen Marie Monning?
Yes. Actually, I had talked to Karen a long time ago when I was interested in making jewelry for her. She had sold the rights to, I think it was Universal, I can't remember. But once mm-hmm. she sold her rights, it belongs to the studio, and it's up to the studio to decide who they're going to do merchandising with and licensing. So, but it never went into production, so I have no idea where that is right now. But, I mean, I love her books. I've read every single one of them, and I'd love to do something with her. But have you read her YA series? I really like it. I didn't know how it would be, but I'm really kind of liking it.
Is that new? Has that just come out?
Yeah.
I haven't been able to read anything except Outlander for the last, like, year.
Did you reread all of them again? Is that what you're telling me?
No. Well, we did the read-along for Outlander, which was chapter by chapter. So that was literally, approximately 40-ish weeks, maybe 38 weeks. And we did it slowly, which made it manageable. But then after that, and we weren't even done, but then, of course, Written in My Own Heart's Blood, the eighth Outlander novel came out.
Right.
We had to stop everything and read it, still getting our show up. That was still an Outlander. It was a balancing act for a while there. But then we finished that read-along, and we did a chat. I think we had a friend over that we can't even share this chat because we talk about just very, very general stuff, but the whole book. We wanted to get our chat about Moby done before we forgot about it. And I literally forgot we did it because we've been so busy this summer. And I literally was going through some files of the night, and I found it, and I said, Moby, what is this? We haven't even done a season 3 yet. What about 8? What is going on? And then I saw it was our little chat we had with a friend of the show and the two of us just trying to get our thoughts around and get everything out that we wanted to say while it was fresh, because we knew we couldn't talk about it. If we are blessed with every single season of a book, which I pray for, if we are blessed with that, we can't talk about that for 7 years, Janet.
Oh, my gosh.
So anyway, but to answer your question, pretty much that's been it. And then we just started the Dragonfly and Amp read-along.
I've been listening to it because I can't read it. So I've been listening to it while I make jewelry and stuff like that. I love it. I love it. I'm with Summer. It's my favorite book out of the whole series, I have to say.
You mean Ginger.
I'm sorry. What's Ginger's favorite book?
It is
my favorite. It is my favorite.
But yeah, I may have told you in San Diego, I don't know, but my personal reason for it being my favorite is probably not everyone's cup of tea.
I mean, it just, you remember where you were when you read it. I mean, it was just so, but I love it because it's completely imprinted in my DNA.
Have we talked about how you first discovered Outlander?
I don't think so.
So how did you?
Well, this is kind of funny, and it's kind of part of my secret sauce, how I find books. It's not really a secret sauce. I've written about it on Facebook, is that I have a group of friends who read, and we share books, and we share, we only talk books. It's just a group of people who talk books, and we talk about what we like, what we don't like, and we know what each other read. And I was on a dry spell. I mean, you know, if I go even like 2 weeks without reading, I consider that tragic. So I was in a dry spell, and I'm like, I have to get out of this. I have to snap out of this. What am I going to do? You know, I pick up a book, I read 50 pages. I just can't finish a book. So my friends are like, oh, you got to read Outlander. And I look it up on Amazon. It's like 500 pages. I'm like, are you joking? This is the book that you want me to read to get back into my mojo? And they're like, no, you got to read it. You got to read it. And I'm like, so I was putting it off. And finally, I think I went like 2 months without reading a book. And I finally said, okay, screw it. I've tried everything. I'm going to try this crazy Outlander book. I don't care how big it is. I'm just going to start reading it. And I got sucked in, like so sucked in. I think I read all of them, and I don't know. It's just like one after another. I don't think my husband saw me that summer, but it was because I'm like, be quiet, leave me alone, like, don't bother me, this is really important. he's used to that, but I mean, it was like a whole, I mean, it was like 6 months of Outlander. So yeah, that was about, I think, 6 or 7 years ago, maybe a little longer, 7 years ago. And yeah, it really got me back into my mojo. So that's my story. Outlander saved me.
Have you read all eight?
I haven't. Okay, don't get mad at me, everybody. But I haven't read Moby. And the only reason is that I've been so busy, and I'm waiting for the break between Christmas and New Year's just to read it, so I can, because right now I can only read, you know, 20 to 30 pages at a time, and I really want to do a whole week of just reading it slowly, and that's kind of a luxury for me, so that's what I'm waiting for. I did start reading it, and then I put it down, and I said, you know, this is too good to just read on the train, so that's it.
Well, don't feel too bad. I've got 2 hours left of The Book of Life on my audiobook, and I have not finished it. I haven't been able to, and I have all my friends who've read Book of Life who are like hounding me to finish it, and I'm like, I'm trying, you guys, I need to find time.
Speaking of that series, Summer, I think I sent you a message or something, but Summer had mentioned it. I mean, you may have mentioned it, I don't know. I know you like it, or I know you love it. Obviously you love it enough to create inspired.
I do love it. There's everything about it, I love it. I mean, I love this whole genre in my head of books where people are hunting for books. Like, I read, if there is a story where people are hunting for books, I've read it. And so when this was all about Pine Ashmole, I mean, I was like, oh my gosh, this is part of the hunting book thing. It's just like Karen Marie Bonning. I mean, they hunt for books there. Oh, A.S. Byatt, she had a book hunting thing. Have you read Possession?
Wow. I have not.
Oh my gosh, you guys would love that book. It's fantastic.
Well, now we have
It's also a love story, but don't watch the movie because Gwyneth Paltrow is the heroine, and I don't agree with that, but that's just me.
To go on with the All Souls trilogy. So Summer has been telling me about it for at least a number of years. And then, of course, when I found out about you and the Outlander inspiration thing, and then I went to your website and I saw you had the, you know, some jewelry inspired by that. Finally, was it like 2 months ago or a month and a half? I think about 2 months ago, I finally started reading them, or I listened to them. And I listened to the first two, and I know number three is already out. Anyway, that's kind of my next, maybe when Summer's done, I'll borrow her book. But that is, talk about starting something and being sucked in by like page two. It was amazing.
Well, it's so funny. I said I tried to read the A Discovery of Witches, and my friend's like, you got to read this, Janet. I'm like, okay. So I read the first 40 pages, and I could not get into it. I'm like, Sherry, please. I mean, she's like, keep on going. And, you know, when your book friends tell you to keep on going, you trust them, so you keep on going. And then I think it was like it's when she started rowing, and he was like following her rowing. I'm like, okay, this is good. Vampire's trying to get her. So that kind of, I mean, you knew it was going to happen a little bit, but it took me a while to get there. It's like a girl with a dragon tattoo. That took me about 50 or 60 pages to get into. And I think that Outlander does it too. What it does is it slows your world down. It's kind of a universe building type of, I don't know, tool to make you gear or your lifestyle or whatever, and just slow down and read the book and get into the rhythm of the book. And sometimes people can't get into that rhythm, but some books force you to because it's so interesting. It makes you, it changes you. It changes your rhythm, which is, I think, fantastic. So Outlander did that. I mean, every time I go to Outlander, read it or even listen to it, I feel like all of a sudden life is just slower. And that's good. It's a stress reliever.
Agreed. And part, for me at least, part and parcel, yes, it happens with the book, like, you know, the physical book it happens, but especially with the audio. And of course, Davina's masterful performance.
Yes.
But especially with the audiobook, when no matter what I'm listening to with her of the series, time does kind of flow. And if I know that I have like, you know, a half an hour to read, or I have the sleep timer on to listen to a little bit, like 15 minutes as I fall asleep, you know, I can live with that because I'm either falling asleep or I know going into it that I have only a limited amount of time. But, and I'm trying to say this with love, if someone interrupts me and I get ripped out of that,
it is
like it's a jolt.
Yes, it is. It is. It's like being, you know, sucked through some stones back into, you know. I see it literally. I mean, it's time travel. It's time travel.
It's definitely. It's time travel. It's world travel. It's wow. It's just because it so occupies your mind and your brain and your emotions, everything. And your language centers, because you're focusing on whether it's auditory or visual reading, so much of your being, especially if you love and you lose yourself in the story, is taken up by this experience. That if you're ripped out of it, I mean, it could almost be, it would almost be painful.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, speaking of the Outlander series again.
Yes.
Still. Well, we've gone back and forth. We know we're all here to talk about Outlander, ultimately. So you have been creating. Yes, you had that your inspired drawing last year, your artistic sketch.
Right.
What types of Outlander-inspired pieces have you created thus far, kind of related to, at least for now, the first season of Outlander?
You know what? I haven't done anything, really. I mean, that coincides with the first season. I would have to say that what I made for people who love Outlander in Scotland and that period I made things that were for fans, like all the Sassenach pins and the charms. And I thought that was had to do with all the books because he calls her Sassenach the whole time.
Yes.
And I,
yes.
So I made it for the fans, for the books in general, and obviously for the show, but I really didn't make it for the show. I made it for just the fans who really liked it. So, I mean, as you know, I've done Luck and Boops, which aren't in the show at all, but they are, but they are something from Scotland, and it's actually really a lovely custom. I didn't know that people exchanged them, and so that's until I did a lot of research on it, and I thought that was such a great custom. But I have done the rings, at least the rings that I think are beautiful, but I don't think they have any resemblance to any type of ring that should be on the show. It's a ring that has thistles on it, and it's Celtic, and there's knots, and a lot of people really like them, and I have a lot of gratitude for people on Twitter and Facebook who've really supported them, so thank you everybody.
So your piece is definitely, the key word is inspired.
It is key.
And because you have been inspired for so long by the books, the timing is such that, of course, Outlander just exploded with the series,
right.
But the timing is such that it may seem to kind of coincide time-wise, but you have been inspired by these books.
Yes.
For
years. No, I've been inspired for these books for years, and frankly, some of these designs that I've had, the two rings, I didn't just pull those out. I've had those for a while, and the elements, and I put them together, and the Sassenach pins. I mean, thistles. There's a lot of thistles out there, and I wanted to create a thistle that was kind of modern but kind of classic. I enjoyed creating them and being inspired by Outlander in Scotland, and I hope people like them. Well, I know people like them.
Well, we know them.
Yes.
They keep going out of stock. People love them.
Sorry?
I said they keep going out of stock. People love them.
I know they do, and I'm kind of blown away at the enthusiasm, and it's just so wonderful to be a part of a universe where people really like what you do. I mean, they get what you do. You know, I talked to my mom, I'm like, well, mother, it's kind of like doing costume design for books. And my mother's like, uh-huh, right? I don't understand that. And so it's so nice to talk to people who actually get it. So So I do appreciate when people go on Twitter and Facebook and like things. So.
Of course, very much so for your Outlander-inspired pieces and images, anything that you produce. But we haven't seen, I mean, not that we would expect anything like that, but everything we've seen of yours has been just breathtaking. Everything, no matter what line, no matter what inspired universe.
Well, I do come out of fine jewelry. It's really funny because, if it were up to me, everything would be in gold, in 18 karat gold. So when I make things, I mean, you can go to Etsy, and I really, you know what, I support craftsmen on Etsy. If you like, I mean, I make things for people who like jewelry and like the books. But if you're fans and you want to collect everything, just go on Etsy and get the, there's so many beautiful things out there. And I know that you did recently a giveaway, and there was this great Sasanach leather, was it a leather bracelet? Fantastic craftsmanship. And so, I mean, I have, and I'm also part of a Facebook craftsman type of group. And there's a lot of people making a lot of things, and I support them all, and I think that it's wonderful what Diana has inspired in all of us. But what I do specifically is make jewelry for people who love jewelry and who love Outlander. So everything is most of it is silver. I do some brass things. I try to keep the prices for the fans. I mean, the rings that I'm making right now are... they're David Yurman quality rings that would retail at Saks Fifth Avenue for easily for $450. And so, you know, And so when I make it this price, it's because I want people to live the books the same way I do, you know? And that's why I sell online, and I don't have a store, because it take all that middleman commission stuff out, and I can really price it for people who want to wear it.
Well, and that's an important thing to get across to people who maybe aren't familiar with your jewelry, is that when you're buying Janet's jewelry, it's quality jewelry. It's not something that it's going to turn your finger green, or
you're not hopping into. I mean, yes, they're inspired because you like the stories first and foremost, and you love jewelry, but you are not, quote unquote, getting into this to sell a million pieces of something is just to sell a million pieces of something. You're creating something that you've been inspired to create that you hope others love.
Yes, I mean, I'm a goldsmith. You're getting goldsmith jewelry in silver. and I accommodate people. I mean, it's really funny. Everyone is so sweet when they write in. They're like, is it okay if I get, like, if it's just a little shorter, if you make it 16 inches? And it's fine. I mean, I'm happy to accommodate whenever I can. Some people, you know, they don't want a capuchon. They want a faceted gem. And I'm a jeweler in that sense. If you want to customize something and it's really super easy, like shortening or just switching out a stone, I will do that for free because that is so easy. And I'd rather have people learn about jewelry so when they go to their own jeweler that they know what they can do. And, you know, I even send ring sizers out to people if they don't know what their ring size is. And it's just because that's what 19th century jewelers used to do. And I'm kind of a 19th century jeweler in a weird way, even though I sell on the internet. I'm modern and old school, like new school, old school. So, yeah, so it's fun. I like all my clients. I think they're very, very nice. And I talk to them on Twitter and Facebook, and they're really enthusiastic. And the Outlander people are crazy. I mean, not crazy, but they're crazy lovely.
Yes. we completely understand. So another distinction that I've noticed is that all of your pieces, you state, are made with reclaimed metal.
I am a big environmentalist, and, you know, I have to find casters who do use reclaimed metal. That's why I don't like to buy a lot of things. I mean, there's some jewelers who like to buy pieces and assemble them, and I think that's good. But I really like I'm an environmentalist. I mean, if you can get it reclaimed, then you should get it reclaimed. And there should be no reason to dig unless you absolutely have to. Because I think there was a statistic that like 2 tons of of earth have to be moved in order to get 1 ounce of gold? And I just can't be behind that. So yeah. So you get good design and you get it in reclaimed metal. So that's pretty good, I think.
How do you reclaim metal? Do you go to auctions?
No. So there are a few casters that buy from refineries, and the refineries are in charge of certifying if it's green or not. And so the refineries will say, we sell to these casters, and all of the metal that we sell to them are from reclaimed sources. And they're all verified from a third-party source. So it all comes down to the refinery. And the refining metal is also a dirty business, but it's still, you have to choose. Do you want to dig for more new things, or do you want to refine the metal that's already in this world? So I chose that.
I did not know that. So thank you so much for asking, and thank you, Janet, for explaining that, because I've heard of recycled wool, recycled silk, etc., for those that don't want to use or add to
right.
that. I didn't even know it was possible to reclaim.
Yeah, well, I mean, it can be reclaimed or recycled. What I do, and this is also what most jewelers do, is that when you get a casting, there's always what we call a sprue, or a piece of metal that connects to while you're casting, and you always have to cut it off. And what you do is you bring it back to your caster, and it's recycled. So, I mean, jewelers are used to recycling, and people, I mean, when gold was really out of the, you know, at 2000 an ounce, people would take their gold jewelry and go and recycle it. And that's what reclaimed metal is anybody who decided to, you know, sell their gold necklace. It goes to a refinery, gets refined, and then I turn it into a Sasanak pin.
Speaking of Sasanak pins and your Outlander-inspired pieces in general, what is your favorite piece that you've created?
Oh, that's hard. That's really hard, because there's some things that I have that I haven't shown yet. And
oh, don't say that.
And I'm gonna tell you what it is. This is for Ginger. I've had a dragon fly in amber ring designed for at least 3 years, and it's been sitting. And it's also a pendant, and it's really big. And
a pendant
and a ring. I mean, so it's the same size. Actually, I should take it out and tell you the dimensions of it. It's kind of big. I mean, I can only do it in millimeters, but it's almost 30 millimeters, which is about an inch and a quarter. So it's an oval.
Yeah.
It's an oval. And, so it's a huge ring. I'm not sure if I'm going to make it, but it's a beautiful size pendant. So I think it's 30 millimeters by like 20 by 30. And, so it's actually, what's so wonderful about it is that, I've seen a lot of them, and usually like the dragonfly is on top of a piece of amber, but there's really not a good one where it's inside the amber. And so I've made it so you could pour resin into it so it covers over it. So it's really a dragonfly in amber.
Oh, wow. Like a real dragonfly.
Well, not a real dragonfly. Well, I mean, I could put it. You know what? No, I couldn't do that. I love dragonflies. I would never put a dragonfly in amber, in resin.
Thank you, Janet.
I couldn't
Thank
do that. I couldn't. I think I would cry. Well, the thing is that dragonfly, when you see dragonflies, it means that you live in a really pristine area, too. You know, there's a lot of wetlands by us, and if you see dragonflies, it means that you have a really good ecological system by you. So I would never kill a dragonfly. In fact, I would cry they're so beautiful. But I have a very realistic dragonfly that will look like it's an amber. How's that?
Love it. Oh, my goodness.
What would you say has been your most difficult piece, not just an Outlander, but of all of the book-inspired pieces to create?
The most difficult is the Isabeau ring. And
that's what I thought.
Dear Lord, I mean, it is so hard to make. I have a jeweler, and I showed her what I made, and she's like, oh, so you just made a couple of them. And I'm like, no, I think I've made about 40 of them, 40, 50 of them. And she's like, what? are you insane? I'm like, I think I'm insane because if someone wants it, they really, really want it. And so I make it, and it's really hard. It's a hard ring to make, but I do make it. It's three rings in one. And it has to be all handmade.
It's almost exactly what I envisioned it looking like when I read the book.
Oh, really?
It's insane. Insane.
Oh, wow.
Just all those three rings all going together.
Yeah.
That one you made, and then I think the other one, one of the first pieces I saw was when you made the Matthews, the little stamp on the seal.
Oh, yeah, I love that one. Oh, I love it.
I love it. Those are the ones. It's the actual seal charm.
Oh, yeah.
Matthew Claremont seal.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, my
goodness. It's so funny. When I started doing this, I was doing everything by hand, and now I'm doing a lot of 3D work. And I would love to redesign it. There's so many things where I'm like, I really love that, but it would be so much better if I could just redesign it. But I think that it's hard as an artist to say, okay, it's finished. And nothing looks finished to me ever, mm-hmm. which is hard because, I don't know, if I could redo everything that I've made, I think that I would do it. If I had a summer to do it, I would redo everything. It's awful, but, you know.
Awful. I know, it makes sense. The mark of a true artist is that, not that you're better than anybody, but that what you put into the universe, these pieces are a part of you, and you have a vision, and part of bringing that out of yourself and into the world is part of the art of it, is translating that vision that you have, and it's not always the first time.
Oh, it's never the first time. I mean, I make three prototypes at least for each piece that's out there. The prototype process I love, and when it's finished, it's so hard to keep on making like when it's finished, I'm like, okay, it's finished in my head. But then that's when everyone starts ordering it. And it's kind of funny because I'm like, I'm so finished with this piece. Let's move on to the next piece. But then, you know, when you look at it later, like Matthew's seal, I would love to do this in 3D, like scan it in and move it around and change it a little. But I do love tools. I love computers. I love tools. And I love making things that you can't do by hand. Like, for example, the amethyst thistle ring, that would be almost impossible mm-hmm. to make by hand. Almost impossible with that much detail.
Very detailed.
And the thing is that it's a three-part process. I mean, you have to do it in 3D, and then you have to print it, and then you have to mold it, and then you have to cast it. And even when it comes out as a cast, you still have to work on it. Takes a lot of time to do prototypes.
You mentioned the 3D work. Now with 3D mm-hmm. printers, or as technology gets better, do you foresee that being part of the process?
It is part of my process. I print right now at least 80% of my pieces.
Are 3D printers?
3D printers, on high-res 3D printers.
Oh,
solid
goodness.
Work.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
I'm so high-tech.
You're fancy, Jan.
I'm really high-tech. And this is where my crazy master's degree comes from, you know, at NYU, is that we were programming and stamping things like way back in, I don't know, 1990, whatever. You have to, as an artist, you have to use the best tools for the product that you're making or the piece that you're making. And people, when I was researching thistle rings, they're beautiful, but technology is to the point now where you can make it so intricate and so beautiful. You should do it. If you can, you should do it. Because it will really surprise the people who are invested in that universe. Or they don't even need to know the universe. I'm trying to make pieces that people will also just love. I think people would buy this ring regardless to whether they know about Scotland or Outlander. At least that's what I feel.
You had me at Outlander, but I'm also a sucker for mm-hmm. silver. And you add that purple, and I will pretty much get anything.
Well, they're going to be available in different stones too. So it will. That will happen later this month. And you know, I have some people are like, I have so many stones. I'm like, that's fine. Just can we do this next year and not during holiday season? Because I try to accommodate as many custom orders as possible, but during the holiday season, I just want people to get their presence. It's the most important thing, is just in and out as fast as possible, so no one worries and everyone gets what they want for the holidays.
Well, if you want to make sure that Ginger buys one of everything in that line, just make sure it's got unicorns and purple.
Oh, no, but unicorns aren't.
Unicorns. I have a little baby unicorn. I was doing
Yes, I know. We've chatted about this, and you refused to sell it.
Oh, no, that's, oh, you mean the knitted one. No, I have like a little, yeah. I have a little baby unicorn. I was making these cute, evil little pendants, and I have like a cat with bat wings, and I have a little seal with a unicorn thing, but I have also a baby unicorn. So I don't know when I'm going to ever roll those out. They're cute and evil. Oh, they're not all cute. They're evil, too. So,
Well, that's an interesting take on it, but because you don't see a lot of evil unicorns. But
it's as cute as it is evil. I mean, that's what makes it so cute.
Aww.
Kind of
that does sound
it's kind of an anime type of thing.
Okay, so as we wind down a little bit, can you tell us a little bit about some of your upcoming projects?
I can't. I can't. I wish I could. Some of the things are really exciting, but I can't. I am bound. I've signed myself to secrecy. So I can't say that I recently finished a project for an Amazon.com TV pilot, which was a pretty big budget thing, and I hope it does well. So that's one thing I finished that I can't say anything else about. And
oh my goodness! So wow.
Yeah, no, it's pretty big. And then what else? The Ryan Gosling movie should be out soon. And sometimes they take things and they put them on people, but I don't know what they ever use. So I'm kind of dying to see the movies to see what Christina Hendricks is wearing. And Eva Mendes. So we'll see what happens with that. Yeah, a whole bunch of stuff I can't talk about.
Well, that's actually the best interview answer that we've ever had. There's some great stuff. I can't tell you anything. No, it's great. We love it. What's the best way to go about finding out about you?
There's two ways. You can go on my website, which is kasalon.com, and it will be up on your website so you can go on Outlander Pod and find me. But just go to my Facebook page. I think that's the best way to see how I talk to everyone and what people say. And usually that's the first place I post when news comes out. So that's probably the best place to go too.
You've already kind of mentioned it a few times, but you're also very communicative on Twitter. You definitely interact with people on Twitter.
Oh, I do. I do talk to people on Twitter when I'm on. Yeah, absolutely. I like Twitter.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. I tried to. Oh, have you guys got an account on LO? Because that place is really weird. But I kind of like it. It's in between Tumblr. It's like if Tumblr and Twitter and Facebook had a baby. I know that sounds, if they shared DNA, it would be LO. It's more Tumblr and Twitter.
How do you spell
it? It's more Tumblr and Twitter than it is Facebook. It's ELLO.co.
My goodness. We may have to check that out just for
now it's only invitation only, but everybody's been talking about it. And someone sent me an invitation and I went on and I'm like, this is really kind of weird, but it's fun weird. I like it.
It's fun weird, like your cute evil unicorn.
Exactly. So there's a lot of
I won't make
an evil unicorn for you. It's cute and evil. That's the key. The cute.
No, a cute evil. Yeah, cute and evil. Yeah. When they come out, I will definitely get one because that sounds, I don't have to have every single unicorn thing out there or else I wouldn't be able to afford the storage space. But it definitely is intriguing, and that's kind of I like unique things with unicorns. So that actually, I've never heard of that. So that actually sounds very unique.
That's because I just made it up. I mean, I like cute and evil things, like things that are too cute, like a tribble. That's too cute for me. So it has to be a little evil, just a little.
Just a little. Just like a little bit of a facial expression or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, something to just tweak
exactly.
it a little bit.
But they're still more cute. I mean, never mind. I'll show you a picture of one of them, and then you'll be like, that is so cute, but a little evil. So
I look forward to that. Well, Janet, thank you so much. It has been a pleasure, and we hope one day, not too far away, we can have you back.
Oh, sure.
maybe for a chapter of the Dragonfly and Amber read-along, since it is your favorite book and all.
I know, but I will just start crying. Do you really want me to start crying? I mean, like, and can you believe?
Well, crying is optional. Yeah, so anything, if you have a favorite chapter that you can get through
without crying.
Actually, the beginning is really easy. Like up until I can't even talk about it, right? I shouldn't go ahead. The first third is still pretty okay, I think.
So thank you so much, Janet.
Thank you very much, too. And I'll see everybody on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, have a great evening.
We want to say a huge thank you to Janet for spending some of her very precious time with us.
And be sure to come back next week when we return for our read-along.
Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com. I dreamt it last night that my young love